Who loves social studies class in high school? Social studies can be exciting when you have a second-year teacher, Tyree Cripps, from Cookeville High School, as your teacher. Welcome to the show, Tyree. How are you?
Thank you. Doing good. Just got in from teaching a class today. So
yeah.
Not bad.
I want to know how that's going, too. So we're going to dig into that for sure in a second. But let's start with you. So I'll make everybody introduce themselves and give a little background. So where are you from? How'd you end up teaching?
I am from Smithfield, Tennessee, not far from here. So I'm around the area. Since second grade, honestly, you know those things where it's like all about me posters that you do in second grade. I want to be a teacher when I grow up. And here I am, you know, fully doing that job now, full time. And I just finished my last grad degree, EDS in ed tech. So
congrats on that.
Thank you. I'm glad to be done with that, but I'm glad just to be teaching now, like full in the experience. So it's been really good so far.
Yeah. So you always wanted to do that. So
yeah.
Did you ever waver, or is that like, this is the plan, this is what
teaching?
I'm going to do?
Yeah, no,
teaching.
I had a, you know, everybody in college, you decide halfway through, you're like, oh, I might want to change my major. And I thought about it for 5 minutes, but then I was like, no, this is what I want to do. I think, too, you're scared of doing that because college, you're worried about, is this really what I want? 4 years to go into a field, is this really what I want to do?
Yeah.
And I think getting in, and I realized as soon as I started teaching, like, yeah, I made the right decision. So that was good.
Yeah. Now, do you have family? Teachers?
No. I don't have any family that are teachers. I was a first-generation college grad.
Okay.
So I did that. But my family, you know, always supportive of me being a teacher. So grateful for them in that.
Yeah. And that's a lot of people. Talk to a lot of people, and a lot of times there's somebody there. You know, that was a teacher in an immediate family, and then they get pulled in, you know, because they're like, you're thinking about doing something else, and then you end up working your way in. And it's funny because you're a little bit younger, and so I know that when I have been out in schools, people in your age group have had some weird career, in my mind, because I'm a little more old school, weird career choices, like I want to be a YouTube and social media influencer, or these things that like didn't even exist when I was in school. Do you have friends or people that you know that were kind of off in these weird things, and then you're like, well, I'm gonna be a teacher,
I think some people are, you know, they're all interested in what all they're doing. I don't think I have any like social media influencers in. You never know, though. That can happen at random times. So some of my friends might go for it. But no, I think anytime they always ask, it's like, you're going to be a teacher. And I think it made sense to a lot of people, you know, when I told them that's what I want to do, especially because I love what I teach. Mm-hmm. You know, I love social studies. I love government. So just knowing what I teach, it makes sense, I guess. It just fits. So it worked out.
It fits. And it's, we hear that a lot with history teachers. I mean, I hear a lot of people, and it's a fairly strong population of, you know, fairly healthy population of people who want to go into teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it gets crossed with a coach and a teacher, and it can get a bad rap to be a history teacher, but to be a history teacher, government, when you really have that passion, it makes sense.
Yeah. I'm there to teach government and civics. That's what I love to do. So I don't coach anything right now. But I'm there to teach what I love. So I hope I do that good enough for the students I have.
Yeah, and I'm sure you will. And if you end up in, if you were in a smaller district, if you had gone back to Gabb County to teach, they might have had you teaching and coaching. Some of the smaller districts, I had teachers who would teach and coach, and then they would also drive the bus for a little extra cash.
Is that all that on the application when they put it in, or is it just understood? Like, this is what you're doing.
There's kind of a running joke with because the director of schools will still call us, and he'll say, I need a math teacher who can. Who's also a softball coach, you know, and then I'll add in and a bus driver, and they're like, well, if they have their CDL, it's helpful because then they can drive the softball girls to their games.
Yeah.
And we don't have to pay an extra bus driver. So that is always entertaining. So growing up, then you probably had a teacher, either K-12 or higher ed, somebody that kind of influenced you and it either encouraged you or helped you kind of form who you are. So who is that for you?
Yeah, I've had a lot of good teachers going through the system. And I think just having good teachers made me want to be a teacher and solidified my decision that I want to do that. But especially one to pinpoint more recently would be Dr. Akinson. We know him from Tech. Just a great person. I have a lot of memories from classes in my cohort that graduated in my undergrad from there that we still get together and we talk about. We have a group chat, the History Hooligans. We're still connected. So shout out to all of them. But no, Dr. Akinson just has a way of showing you how you can teach something that's outside of the box. I mean, you can take a student's interest and it might not be what you think is relevant, but there's a teaching moment in there. So I think always trying to bring in what students enjoy and letting them have a say in how they learn and what they learn is pretty important. And Dr. Akinson just kind of highlighted that for me, both in undergrad and in grad school at Tech. So I'm grateful for that and him.
Yeah. Have you found yourself carrying over some of the things? Like I'll take that question with a raised hand.
Yeah, that's a staple. That's an Akinism right there. One of those staple Dr. Akinson things is I'll take that comment with a raised hand. And yeah. Anytime he can insert like a country music dig, mm-hmm. all about it. So yeah, there's some good Akinson points we take away. But especially the raised hand. I think every social studies teacher in our department knows that I'll take that comment with their hand.
Yeah.
All from Dr. Akinson.
Yeah, because they've heard it. Well, and from a classroom management standpoint, mm-hmm. that's a really good way to spin that kid who's got so much excitement, they just want to blurt it out, you know. And, of course, that's a good place to be when they're excited about what you're teaching mm-hmm. at the time.
For sure. And I'll take that with a raised hand.
So, yeah.
And that's how you do it. You just repeat it back to them. And they'll usually raise their hand afterward. But it throws them off. When I've used it in class, they're kind of like, what? But then it works. So mm-hmm. it works.
Yeah. You work through there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found yourself thinking back to your high school days and thinking about some of the things that the way that you learned or the way that those teachers taught, good or bad, now that you've kind of finally, you walk in and shut the door and it's your classroom?
Yeah, when you close the door and it's your classroom, it was kind of a wake-up moment that first day. I'm like, this is my room. You know, it's like, these are my kids. I'm responsible mm-hmm. for these kids knowing what I'm teaching. It's like, oh, man. But, yeah, you go through, like, I think back to teachers I had, good and bad, like you said, you have that. I mean, it's in any career, but in school, you see that as a student, especially one that wants to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I picked up on a lot of those things. But there's some things I did in high school that I use in class now, some assignments that I did. And then there's some ways I remember teachers were and how I didn't want to be like that in my own classroom. Because mm-hmm. not if it wasn't directed at me, but just other students, you just pick up on that. So, yeah, I think it's just you take it and then apply it. And it's kind of a mix of all those life experiences in the classroom mm-hmm. that I kind of looked at and applied it to my own.
Mm-hmm. And put it in there. So what did that look like on your first day? And I know you kind of jumped in mm-hmm. middle of last year mm-hmm. and started, but so this year is almost like your real first beginning of class. How did you feel about that when you shut that door?
Yeah, it was my first official first day or whatever. Cause last year I got 75% of the year in. So I started the day after fall break. So those kids left on fall break for 2 weeks, and then I get the call, hey, can you come in for interview? And I got the job, and I come in. They're like, who are you? Are you our sub? That's literally the first question. A kid came in. He's like, are you our sub today? I'm like, no, I'm actually your teacher. And they're like, oh, okay. And it's like the next question is, how old are you? And you know kids when they know all the life questions, especially when I am only like 4 or 5 years old.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But it was good. But the feeling of just like having your own class, it just, I don't know, it's like it paid off. For me, and it just really showed like I can have these kids in this classroom for, you know, however 50 minutes a day, and I can make it a good start to their morning, a good midday, but, you know, before they go to lunch, it can just be a good spot for the kids. Mm-hmm. And that's a classroom I just tried to make. And honestly, I just love it. I don't know. It's just like I fit. And I know I've said that, you know, twice already, but it just does. It just feels like a fit. I think you know what you do. And that moment that I closed the door is like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here. So I think I just mm-hmm. hit the ground running and went mm-hmm. with it.
And you're in charge. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's
scary. It's scary at the same time. It's like, oh, these kids answer to me. It's like, where's the adult in the room? Because I'm still looking, trying to figure it out myself sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, it is.
Yeah. Now, have you had to lean on your team mm-hmm. at the high school? Or do you have an official mentor assigned to you or someone that you're kind of lean on?
I do. So Coach Bayless, Mr. Bayless is my mentor. He's been great. Just anybody in the social studies department, it's like I open my door and go next door to any of them and they're there. any questions I have, if I have a question about an assignment, anything like how to deal with the student, you know, because I am first year. So that's something that you have to learn, like, hey, the student did this in class, what would you do? And trying to just get what they would do and how use it in my classroom. Because, you know, that's a learning process. And mm-hmm. You can go through college, you can go get your degrees. You still don't know exactly how you're going to react and how you need to react from things that you learn in college. It's mm-hmm. just a practical experience. You just learn it. So I've relied heavily on all the teams. So there's like 12, I think, social studies teachers, a good chunk, more than a regular school would be mm-hmm. because Cookeville is so big. Mm-hmm. So there's awesome people that work there in our department, and I can talk to any one of them for advice. So it's been really good there.
Yeah, and that's really helpful. And it's something that we hear, you know, building out pre-service programs and trying to make sure that we educate and cover as many things as possible. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't prepare someone for everything until you jump in and learn what that's like to deal with the fire alarm going off. And I mean, those things, you can't replicate those in a college classroom. We'd love to be able to, but it's, you know.
And you never know what seniors in high school are going to say in the middle of a lesson about government and civics. So it's kind of like, really, you know, you never know. I mean, it's just kids are kids at the end of the day. But yeah, it's always every day you have a different story coming out of it. So it's different every day. You just got to get in there and learn it.
Mm-hmm. And the government, the class you teach is not a tested subject. Well, in terms of like ACT or
it's not. They just have to pass the state civics exam. So that's a state law by our state legislature. They have to pass a modified. There we go. Exam that's similar to the civics exam, just so they can get their diploma. So that's a requirement from the state, and that's what we have to get our students to pass by then. So that's the requirement.
And did you do pretty well on that last year?
Is that during your
class or is it after?
Mm-hmm. We basically what we teach in my content up through Gov and Civ, we just go all the way through. They learn three branches of government, you know, basic stuff like that. And by the end of that, they should be able to pass the civics exam. It's our final. And so all students have to take it and pass it. So if it takes a one or two times, we still work with them because every kid's got to walk across that stage. So we're tracking a lot of kids at CHS, but we get it done because it's a part of the law. So you got to do it.
Okay. Very good. Well, let's take a short break and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the specifics of what you teach. Talking with Mr. Tyree Cripps, first year, second year teacher. I guess it depends on how you define it. We'll say first and a half year teacher. So new. So it's fun to me to hear the interactions and the learning experiences with being a new teacher. So what have you done just in your short time? What have you done so far that you thought went really well? And tell me something that's flopped that you had to make a note. Not do that again.
Okay, so something that went really well, honestly, we were covering the Bill of Rights for one assignment, and I know you have to be traditional in some ways, you know, the DBQs, analyzing primary documents. I get that. It's all has its time and place. But also, I was like, I want to do something different. So what my students did, we made, you know, the Nike Air Force One shoes that everybody wears. They're plain. They designed their own shoe based on the Bill of Rights. So I had different things like represented in any of the first 10 amendments, they could create a shoe and they had to give reasoning and write out like a response of why, you know, why they did what they did. That project went fantastic. Kids were passionate about what they were, you know, drawing on a shoe, which seems like, why are we drawing in government class? But hey, whatever we do to learn. And it went great. And the reasoning was stronger than me just giving it to them as a bell ringer. I don't know. I think it was probably because of they tied to the work they did, so they created something, so they had more of a buy-in for that. So that went really well. So we're actually going to do that again in like 2 weeks with this next group. So it's something I stuck around. Something that flopped, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some stuff did. Maybe not my mind, but I know it did to the kids. I don't know. That's a tough one. Sometimes I think, I don't know if it was necessarily like a project or something that flopped, but I think some days I teach something and I feel like it flopped. Mm. Like if it's a topic and I just am like, man, I just didn't really teach that good. And I don't know if it's for the kids or me, but I always try to go back and ask. But I think you just have those days, you know, where sometimes it just seems like it's a flop. I hope it's not. But as far as projects go, I don't think we've had many now the kids listening, if any of my former students, they'll probably be like, yeah, there were some. And if there were, let me know, because I'm all about the feedback. But, yeah, I don't know. As far as a project, probably not one that I can think of. I'm sure there is one. But some days you just feel like maybe flopped on teaching. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we all have our days. You
might have a bad day. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to always 100% be engaging with a topic with every student every day.
Yeah, and I teach the same subject for the whole day. I teach U.S. Gov. I don't switch subjects. I'm teaching government. Three regular classes and three honors classes. So it's the same content the whole day. So
do you catch yourself trying to remember if you'd already talked about or said the same joke or if you'd already talked about that topic? Did I cover that topic already?
I ask the kids all the time. I'm like, y'all have to keep up because I'm doing this too many times in a day. So y'all got to be my, you know, hold me accountable. Uh-huh. Did I already give you this joke or have I given this answer yet?
Yeah.
So tell me, like, where are we at in the lesson? I rely on the kids for that a lot.
To keep track, yeah. Well, so with your subject areas, and so I know that project-based, getting stuff hands-on is so much more engaging than just like, I'm gonna talk. I'm going to lecture for 45 minutes, and kids' attention spans are way too short for that these days. So across the topics, which ones are you kind of thinking through, like, I could make a really good project with this, or how do you make it interesting?
Yeah, so a couple of mine, and it's really, you know, we always are trying to bring relevance to the content. Mm-hmm. And I tell my kids, you know, the first day when we were in going syllabus, like, you pay taxes. You are literally investing into government. So you need to be aware of it, you know, and I stress that to the kids. But as far as they're, you just say buy-in, right? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, a buy-in or just, keeping them engaged.
Engaged, So what we do is we write, one thing we do is, I haven't done this last year, but I found it, is you write letters to your legislatures. Now, if you choose to send it, you can. But, I mean, that's something that you get them involved with the process of how a bill becomes a law. Mm-hmm. And instead of, like you said, traditional just lecturing, I can lecture how a bill becomes a law, and I do. But for them to practice it, they can write something about they're passionate, you know, about. Maybe they want something changed.
Mm-hmm.
We go through that process of actually doing it, not just me telling them. They're going to go through it as well. And that's a good one as well. And then we do a how a bill becomes a law legislation simulation.
Okay.
Where they are senators, they're representatives, they debate on bills that their fellow classmates do. They vote on it to get it out of committee, and it goes to become a law. And I'm the Speaker of the House because, you know, I'm the teacher, so I got to be the one that runs the gavel and all that. But just being engaged with that, there's so many, like, simulations. I think history, too, gets a bad rap that you can't do that. That it's not as engaged because we are history. It's old stuff we read, you know, it's old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to do that. But doing any kind of like simulation, that type of stuff, and make it real. Let them have a voice. Like, these are your representatives. You know, you can write to them. They work for you.
You know?
And that's what I always just try to stress to them and let them have those real life experiences and opportunities.
I just had a conversation yesterday about a local issue and you know, as an adult now, I'm just like, well, I'm just going to call my county commissioner, you know, and let them know that this is a problem, or I'll send them an email. And it just seems so natural to me. But my 18-year-old self, I would have just probably grumbled and, you know, not tried to commit any of that to action. So it's fun to see that, you know, here are the steps to actually do that. Mm-hmm. And that certainly makes it more engaging. And obviously now there are plenty of things to be mad about politically on either side.
Yeah.
You know, there are things that, I mean, there are always going to be things that people are not happy about, regardless of where you fall politically. How do you balance that with your students? I mean, do you have to assign sides, or do you sometimes turn them loose? That's got to be a little tricky balance.
Yeah, so the first day that they come in, I always just try to set the standard, you know, how we're going to treat each other in class. And the first thing when they came in, I say, outside of this classroom, people get degraded every day. You know, people just get bullied. And that's in the real world, too, not just in schools in the country. And I just said, in this room, we're not doing that. You can have your opinion, and it's going to be respected. I'm going to respect yours, okay? But now, as far as debating goes, I don't really do a ton of debates because I started with this debate, Ralphs or Big O's.
Okay.
That was a big one.
That's a safe one.
And one of the kids.
But that's an easy answer.
It is. Yeah. It is for me. And one of the kids was like, well, I like Big O's. That's how I was raised. So then we got into that. Oh, well, then you know, that plays a part in how you think and things like that. So as far as debating, a lot of times it's not a big issue. Sometimes we will, but we don't debate usually the hot topic things. Mm-hmm. We'll debate things like which plan was better for the Electoral College, popular vote, or okay. the Electoral College that we have today. So that kind of stuff. I want them to debate and see the differences. But at the end of the day, too, is a high schooler going to change another high schooler's opinion on something?
Mm-hmm.
And they're still 18, 16 years old. So I don't know if I want them yelling or shouting, but they do really good as far as that goes. But some have questions and ask me after class, and that's sometimes how that goes more often.
Yeah, and you can get there. So see, with the Ralphs, and this will date me, I'm a Ralphs, diehard Ralphs,
mm-hmm.
but used to I was big O's because used to you could smoke in Ralph's, and the old men would sit around and smoke
in the
in Ralph's, in the donut shop. So the donuts taste like smoke. And so I didn't eat Ralph's for years until Tennessee passed a no smoking law. And then I was like, these are the best donuts ever.
So you got to go back after the smoke.
I had to go back to ended up back at Ralph's, and I prefer Ralph's now.
But that might be the biggest debate in my class is Ralph's or Big O's. And then Cane's, Zaxby's, or Chick-fil-A was a big one too.
It could be. Yeah. And it's a great way to get them thinking about really analyzing both sides, mm-hmm. until you ratchet it up and hit them with a real a real topic, and there's a lot of background there that they could bring in and research. So that's a fun way to approach it. So let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and I want to talk a little bit more about CHS. Welcome back, talking with U.S. government teacher Tyree Cripps, a new teacher, just been at it for a little while. So it's fun to have the perspective of a new teacher going in, not far out of college, and not really too far from high school when you think about it. And so, hearing some of the other people that I talk with, just recently spoke with Miss Tina Francis, and she's got 38 years,
wow.
And so that perspective, it gives you such a different perspective along the way. And so one of the things we talked about is we're talking off air, our cell phones. And so I can remember when there was a time when the school system was excited because it's such a strong tool, mm-hmm. in theory. Okay. Not always in practice, but in theory, every kid's going to have this computer in their pocket, and the school may not have to buy laptop carts, and there's all these great things that could happen. Well, now we've come full circle, mm-hmm. and now we're putting them in the pouch. So how do you think that's going at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, that first day those kids walked in and they're just looking at their cases, we handed them all out and they're kind of like, what is this? And I'm like, this is your best friend. Uh-huh. But no, it's like their textbook. They carry it with them everywhere they go. They keep their phones with them. But honestly, it's been really good as far as kids just trying to be more in the moment. If I ever get done teaching early, if we have 5-10 minutes left in class, they're not going to their phones. They're not plugging in their ears. They're turning mm-hmm. around, talking to somebody behind mm-hmm. them, and it's just different. It's like the kids are more present. And I think everybody at some level is addicted to their phone. Mm-hmm. Adults, it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. Adults and kids. So I think, honestly, it's good to give up your phone for 8 hours, in a day for your brain and just like mm-hmm. look at a book or talk to somebody you might not interact with. People aren't running into each other in the halls, because they're not looking down at their phones. So it's been a really good in my class, and I've enjoyed it so far. And then all the kids say their phones have, 90% charge whenever they leave. They don't have to charge it at night. So that's a win
a
for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that if you could watch the usage, the cell phone usage at like 3:30, I'd say the towers are just smoking from everybody, them trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense to me. And I've seen a lot of teachers talking about it on social media, how much of a difference it is with students, how it looks like 15 years ago, mm. where at lunch break the kids are having conversations and they're goofing off and they've got the opportunity to be creative and hopefully staying out of trouble. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that social interaction I think is really was missing,
yeah.
and partly because of the cell phone
and COVID. too. You know, I think a lot of times we think about, everybody always blames stuff on COVID. You know, we at the time, we blame toilet paper shortages on COVID.
Yeah.
We blamed, you know, prices going up on COVID. I think, too, this is what happened at that time with kids losing social interaction. I think this is trying to, you know, a chance at rebooting that, especially with the phones and that, those kids that had a whole gap year, you know, essentially from missing out on school. So I think it's been a pretty good thing. And I had a student, I was telling you this, that she was trying to get contact information for another girl in the class, I guess so they could help each other out, pass notes if one missed, whatever. And she said, I had to ask the teacher for a post-it note to write my contact information down and give it to her friend because she couldn't get on her phone. So it kind of makes kids think about how much they relied on it, you know, before. And I think it's making them more aware. So
yeah, and some of them will have to start memorizing phone numbers. I mean, it, you know, you just press the button that says mom, and then somebody says, well, what's your mom's phone number? I don't know. I mean, you those little things that you kind of take for granted, us people of an older generation, we take those things for granted because it was so much different when we were in school pre-cell phones. We, like I said off air, we still had a payphone in the school. And literally, I mean, everybody had quarters. And if there was some crazy reason, even then, we wouldn't need anything important. But if something changed, we would go to a payphone or use the office phone. And it was, we all made it. I mean, you know, I feel like we were okay. Yeah. So how will you continue to use, what are your options for technology? Because I know there are still things in school that you want to use in terms of technology. So how will you address that without any phones?
Yeah, so the school system, we all, we're a one, you know, each kid in my room gets a laptop. They have access to one in my classroom. But that's only during any time I have an assignment or project that I want them to use for that. So other than that, it's a technology-free room besides my computer and what we're using on the screen. And I like, even though I'm a young teacher, I love paper and pencil. We will use paper and pencil in my classroom. There's something about flipping through it. But Google Classroom, because that's something we still use a lot. If that's something we're allowed to let them, you know, if we have an assignment, they can go get a Chromebook and use that. So they have technology. It's not like we're going completely back to the Stone Age.
Back to chalkboards.
Yeah, there's still Expo markers, whiteboards, and laptops in there. But it's whenever we need them for a project or something like that. So I do things, you know, on WebQuest. We'll do some things like that. And then there's some other online platforms, simulations, and things like that I'll use it for. But other than that, it's just pretty much paper, pencil, and you know, whatever other instructional tools teachers need. But I mean, it's still there, so you could use it every day if you needed to. And if you know, laptops, that's enough. A laptop's good enough for anybody.
So what have you seen in terms of, so let's say you post an assignment in Google Classroom, and obviously using pencil and paper can help avoid this, but if you have that assignment and it's a home assignment, you don't want them to work on it over the weekend. How are you navigating around AI for those students? Have you been careful to say use AI on this, don't use AI on this? Have you tried to guide them through that?
Yeah. So luckily, well, if it's a home assignment, then you know they have the free will to do so and pick how they want to. But there's some ways in Google Classroom that we've learned that you can detect it. There's some detectors we can put on any assignment and look for it. And then there's some other back ways you can do that that some other social studies teachers showed me. So that worked out good.
Don't tell the students.
Yeah, don't tell the kids. But I think you know, at the beginning of class too, I tell them AI's there and there's an ethical way to use it. Now, I don't teach that per se in my class. Now, we do use Magic School for a couple of times in some of my assignments. But I think, you know, just telling them there's ethical ways to use it. And it's not so much now in my class. I'm sure in other classes where they're writing more extensive papers like English, they have to. But, you know, I just try to tell my kids to trust it. But if it's something I really don't want them to use AI on, we're going to write it, you know, paper and pencil. And that's kind of how I bypass it. But no, I'm sure there are kids that have used it, and it has it probably gotten by me. It probably has. Because, I mean, it's difficult to detect it if you don't have, you know, certain guardrails up. I mean, you know that just as well as anybody. It is. It's tough to detect it.
It is. And what I've seen is, and what I've encouraged, is to try to tell future teachers and existing teachers to give better assignments. I mean, and I, you know, not to sound like the assignments weren't good enough, but to give assignments that require more critical thinking, more personalization. So when you're taking that, it makes it more difficult for a student just to toss it into AI and grab the results and because they are missing out. I think there are things that AI can make more efficient and can be more, you know, can be helpful for, but then it can also very easily take the place of your critical thinking, which is a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you ask the students, we're going to debate the difference between, you know, some of these historical perspectives or, you know, against, I mean, something current. And I know you get into a lot of current things, mm-hmm. like the redistricting, gerrymandering is in the news right now. And so if you want to really talk through that face to face is one thing, but if you give the assignment and then a student just goes home and asks it to write a page paper and they come back and turn it in, I mean, they haven't learned anything from that experience. So I feel like there's lots of opportunities and to incorporate that, you know, and maybe if the assignment is to go home and get 4 bullet points on that, talking points, pros and cons that they can bring back and then talk about it in class. I mean, to me, you know, you just have to be a little smarter.
They have to
smarter.
Do the back work for that. If that Correct. Were to, if you were to give them something that's like, here, create this list, mm-hmm. but you're going to need to be prepared to, you know, defend it. And I think that's what all the time, you know, I told my kids teaching, I'm teaching you a strong foundation so you can build your own opinion about government, how things work and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not, that's why I'm here, is just to tell you how things work. And that's when you decide the rest. So I think, that's the same point with AI and using it for an assignment, you know, they're going to have to build that foundation. So if you use it up front, but there's a way you can explain it and back your reasoning. If that is yours, it is. But yeah, I think prompting it, you know, if you just have that easy prompt, like you were saying, give better assignments. That's good. I might have to take that with me. Take that piece of advice and run with it. But no, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. And I don't, it's not going away. Mm-mm. I mean, that's the thing, you know, so how do we use it as an advantage, you know, and how do we teach? I think there's a big piece of ethics in AI that's going to have to come out of it. Like I could even imagine Cookeville High School or Tennessee Tech having an ethics course. And I know that there's some legislation that's moving for AI to start, you know, to make sure that kids are prepared in a lot of different ways. But I think ethics in AI, it's going to be huge for government. I mean, I could see a politician who doesn't have time to write a case study about a bill and just asking AI to build that. I mean, you get into some ethical.
How about that? A piece of legislation built by artificial intelligence.
Built by AI. So, you know, but there's a good debate there. But you know, typically with something like that, it's not exactly life or death. Mm-hmm. But if you take a nursing, you know, a nurse and they're in a pinch and they've got 2 medications and they ask AI for a summary and it's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so there are a lot of implications. I think a lot of things that can be debated. You know, fun stuff for your class to debate, certainly.
Oh, yeah. And we do have some AI parts. And I try to include that because, like you said, it's not going away. So if it's not going away, then we don't need to shy away from it. It's not one of those things you can just push in a corner and expect it to disappear if nobody's going to talk about it. It's going to be there, and kids are going to use it. So I think there is some legislation in the state that's trying to be put through for some teaching of the how to use it ethically and things like that, because it is something that kids need to learn about. If it's a tool that's going to be out there, we need to teach about it. So it's a little bit more difficult to do in my class, you know, as government teaching them, but there's ways I can do it, you know, showing them by example, like, hey, this is how you could use this for this assignment and giving them the opportunity. I think shutting it down completely, you know, can make them take advantage of it. So if you give them some of the areas like, hey, if you can't generate an idea for this political cartoon I'm wanting you to draw, ask AI and see what ideas it gives you. And then they have to create it. So, you know, there's ways you can do it.
Mm-hmm. So it should be some good ideas. And I imagine the kids in your class are going to have a fun year and it'll be great. So I look forward to hearing back from you on how your year's going. But I appreciate you coming out. We've reached the end of our time.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.